coming up tonight, in case you need, or tomorrow, 7 to 9, the first Josh Briscoe show here on 96.5 The Fan. He is our Chiefs contributor from SI.com. Mr. Briscoe, I hate to admit it, I was wrong. I thought Connor was going to get a sack.
Yeah, listen, I mean, we all make mistakes. That's like right. The fact that my show does begin tonight. Yeah,
tonight.
Tomorrow. I knew it was tonight, Josh. I'm sorry.
See, that's what happens when you copy and paste, I would imagine, right, Mac?
Yeah, I mean, look, that happens. Sorry. That's all right. I'm not myself yet. I've only had half of my bowl of boogers and milk to get my day going, so I'm not completely in game mode yet either.
Rogers is no milk. He's just raw.
Yeah, he's just dry.
I missed that somehow last night, and I just think I skipped the booger eating stage of my childhood. Same. Maybe I'll get to it in my 30s. Maybe that's when you really, or maybe Rogers is 40. Maybe, I don't know, Fesco, was there an age when your boogers were most ripe for the biting?
About 40, they start to get crustier, you know, dried up, and you know,
they age like fine wine.
Yeah.
Speaking of eating them dry, Briscoe, what is the best cereal to eat dry?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, knee-jerk reaction right there. No further thought. That's where I immediately went.
See, I would go with Honey Nut Cheerios.
Also a good... Well, hold on. Now you are talking like a toddler again.
Yes, exactly. But so is Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I think that's like a 13-year-old cereal. I'm like I've got the cereal palate of... I mean, listen, again, I had to grow up out of a little bit of that because diabetes is mostly about carbs and sugar, and cereal is two of my favorite things, carbs and sugar.
Right,
so,
yes.
I still prioritize my Cinnamon Toast Crunch experience. It's just on more of a rare occasion, much like the way that Aaron Rodgers apparently treats his boogers.
Yeah. God. Speaking of two of your favorite things, what were the two of your favorite things in this game over the Niners this weekend as the Chiefs win 28-18?
The Mahomes run and having two really like kind of iconic looking Mahomes runs was a blast. And obviously his stat line could not tell less of his story in this game. But we always talk about needing to talk about the defense more. And then I never do because I'm always worried about the receivers or the running back rotation or the offensive line. I'm going to the defense again, guys. This was actually the most successful that an opposing starting running back had been against the Chiefs so far this year, with Mason putting up a massive 58 yards on the ground.
That's right.
It is a dominant defensive unit. My least favorite thing is that we don't know the status of Jalen Watson. That's a really big deal. But if I was going to come tell you that I didn't think Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt could get at least solid cornerback play out of the rest of this crew, I'd be a fool because they've been doing much more than that the entire time they've been here. So I have to give it to the defense that honestly didn't really feel the loss of Mike Dana. The linebackers all had a good day from my first viewing. The secondary is elite at this point, I think. The unit as a whole is just an absolute delight to watch against a Niners team that certainly has a rash of injuries of its own, but these two teams, neither one of them can really claim that they've been bit by the injury bug more than the other. Neither team had really any professional wide receivers by the end of that game. It is an amazing feat, though, that this Niners offense looked as weak as it did.
Well, and give credit to the Chiefs defense for that as well, too. Yes. I mean, you know, you get after it. Everybody wants to go, oh, Brock Purdy stunk. Yeah, he stunk because, you know, he had guys in his face the entire time. But I don't know about you. I'm watching the game yesterday. I'm like, this is why you don't pay Brock Purdy. He needs his weapons to be good, unlike Mahomes, who's good despite of his weapons.
Yeah, and I think that's got to be, like, the biggest question for the rest of this 49ers season, because for whatever it's worth, I don't know if I'm comfortable evaluating Purdy against Steve Spagnuolo, because it seems like a settled law at this point. Spags has had so much success against Shanahan and the Shanahan-like offenses. When they get condensed, Spags can send guys from anywhere, and frankly, like, I haven't seen the blitz rates yet from yesterday, but it wasn't like Spags was getting super, super exotic with the pressures. I think he was getting exotic with what was happening in the middle and back third of the field, and then that's where Purdy got kind of put in a little bit of a scrambler there. Brady talked about it quite a bit on the broadcast, which I thought was interesting, while he could not stop raving about Patrick Mahomes, which I did find kind of delightful yesterday. I enjoyed Brady on the broadcast, which I wasn't completely expecting to do either, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, enjoy... I don't know. I thought he was very meh, mid-average, you know, nothing jumping out, and again... You probably can't because you're an owner of a team now. How many different pronunciations did he have for Steve Spagnuolo, though, in that game yesterday? Because at one time I was up to four different ways that he pronounced Spagnuolo's name yesterday.
Yeah, a lot of steel mag spolias and stuff. And yeah, no, I mean, that I don't know why that is such a challenge for so many. Maybe for Brady, it's his subtle disrespect. You know,
it is.
Years of holding a grudge. I'll say I enjoyed when Brady was talking about the quarterbacks and
too.
The quarterback position. But I would like to see him be able to branch out and do more as he goes on. But, yeah, I think even as Purdy had really played some pretty good football this year, I think he'd had a better start to his year than most people were even giving him credit for last season. But the Niners' results flip, and so he gets a lot more criticism. Yesterday, again, Spags just had him in a blender.
I think the most impressive part about yesterday was that there was one sack, and I think that is the definition game of that pressure kind of takes
Absolutely.
Away from, like, a lot of people don't realize it. Like, I was, you know, driving home from my parents' house on Sunday evening, and I was like, you know, I, you know, predicted there'd be, you know, 2.5 sacks. Chris Jones would have 1.5 of them. Carl Loftus got the only one, but my God, sometimes pressures just go just unspoken, and I think that there's a maybe a little bit of bias there, but the way they pressured Brock Purdy just made him the quarterback that I think a lot of people think that he actually is, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a huge test for any quarterback. I mean, there have been a lot of very, very good quarterbacks in NFL history who become below-average quarterbacks when they're pressured. And obviously, like, that's the most understandable thing in the world, is that an incredibly difficult position becomes almost impossible when you're under pressure. But that's what separates Mahomes or prime Aaron Rodgers, and in some ways, Brady could just sort of precede the pressure. The ball was gone before he actually felt it. Being able to overcome that, I think, is sort of the cutoff for where an elite quarterback can really be, as opposed to a quarterback who looks great in ideal circumstances, be it the weapons, the protection, not being under pressure, and all of that. I think that's absolutely all connected. And for as much as the A word of analytics has been warped and sides have been chosen over the years and all of that, things like pressure rate and double team rate, the things that really explain how excellent Chris Jones has been, I think is some of the most important stuff in understanding the sport now, because you're right. Frankly, I hadn't even looked at the box score again this morning. I didn't even think about one sack for a loss of three, because he was under duress all day. And those three interceptions, there was at least one kind of miscommunication with Bell, it looked like, but that pressure turned into turnovers. It turned into very short drives. They said early in the broadcast, the Niners had 5 3-and-outs. Entering this game through their first 6 weeks, and then the Chiefs defense until that final drive of the first half was absolutely stifling. Again, through and through, the different ways that this defense was able to put up that performance yesterday, I just think was just stupendous.
Where's this team without Kareem Hunt on it right now? Seems like the red zone issues have been solved by Mr. 29.
Yeah, I think we'd be seeing the Carson Steele experiment continue on. Obviously, Clyde was a healthy scratch yesterday. We could have seen him back. Nothing has surprised me more this season than how good Kareem Hunt looked on his return. He's 29 years old, and look, I've seen some people even say he doesn't have the burst that he's had. I don't even think that's the right word. He doesn't have his younger self's breakaway straightaway speed. I'm not expecting him to house one for, you know, from 60 yards out at any point this season. But his remarkable consistency, the fact that Brady may have even said this, I don't know if I'm attributing him correctly, but the ball going to Kareem Hunt means the Chiefs are moving forward, and that is, it's so hard to have an automatic, like, 3, 4, 5 free yards in the NFL, and running with the interior, even Wanya Morris often plays to his strengths, running behind him, Jawan Taylor, no slouch there. This offensive line being able to move guys, and Kareem Hunt being able to hit the hole and lean forward is such a good easy button for this offense. And because that's what they are completely lacking now. Again, you know, I like Xavier Worthy in the long haul, and Noah Gray having a big day is great, and Travis Kelce's probably getting 90% of the eyeballs in that defense. Being able to just give it to your running back and know that you're going to have, by and large, a successful play, even as he ends that day with 3.5 yards on average, that is an easy button this offense has nowhere else. Everything through the air is difficult. Kareem Hunt has something easy for the offense to do, and it's unbelievably useful for keeping this unit on time.
Tonight, the Josh Briscoe Show starts at 7 p.m. It goes till 9 p.m. Do you want to tease anything about what you got coming up tonight?
We'll talk to Matt Verderam at 8. He'll be the inaugural guest, and the rest of that show is going to be me figuring out if I still know how to talk on the radio by myself for a little while. I am relatively optimistic, but look, if it's a train wreck or a good time, either way, you shouldn't look away.
There you go. We'll hear you tonight here on 96.5 The Fan. Thank you again. We'll talk to you next Monday, Josh.
Appreciate you, fellas. Keep your boogers in your nose.
That's exactly right, and out of your mouth.